episode 20 of Be Boomer Unleashed. I'm Jerry Lake, the Unleashed Baby Boomer, and I'll be your host today and for every episode of Be Boomer Unleashed. Today in episode 20, we continue our discussion of the evolution of the church and Christian values. Enter the megachurch, part 3, and we may finish the remaining ingredients to that early megachurch this episode, or we may take one more episode to do that. I'm just not exactly sure of that, but whichever way it happens, it'll happen. I'm in no big hurry, unless you are. Before we get into this episode, let me remind you, you can always find us at beboomerunleashed.podbean.com. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, Tumblr, and Instagram, and Google Play at beboomerunleashed. You can find us on Twitter at BeBoomerUnleash1, and you can always email us, and we encourage you to email us. We appreciate all the comments that we get from our listeners, and you can do that at BeBoomerUnleashed@gmail.com. Once again, that's BeBoomerUnleashed@gmail.com. Now, if you have left comments on the Podbean site, I am able to see those right now, but for some reason I'm having a little bit of trouble returning a comment to you. So it's not that I'm ignoring your comments, got just a little technical difficulty there, so forgive that inconvenience please, and we'll try to get that remedied here in the next week. Had a question from one of our listeners, Dennis, who ask why we considered the Baptists a denomination. Well, we called them a denomination because they were never part of the Catholic Church. And that's true, but the Anglican Church, of course, broke from the Catholics, and then the Baptists broke off of the Anglican Church. So we call that a denomination. Baptists are certainly Protestants. I guess the definition of a denomination would be those things that are held in a little different view from people perhaps in another group of believers. And so that's why we refer to the Baptists as a denomination. And maybe that's right, maybe it's wrong, but that's the best I can do for you there, Dennis. So we're going to go ahead and get into the discussion today. Remember, for the purpose of our discussion, we're defining megachurches as Protestant churches with a membership of at least 2,000. In 1970, there were around 10 of those. By 1990, there were 250. And today, we've grown that number to around 750 or more. The average attendance of these churches is 3,500, and the average net income of those megachurches, remember that's the income after all expenses are paid for, is around $5 million. And the largest megachurch, Joel Osteen, Lakewood Church in Houston, Texas, average attendance 25,000 in attendance, another couple of million tune in on TV, and Osteen's personal net worth over 40 million. So we've discussed those things, but we're going to get more when we finish up this mega church of the 70s. And when we get into the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, we're going to be talking about the TV church and what it's done to organized churches and organized religion as we know it today. And we'll probably title those Enter the TV Church, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, something along those lines, because they're is some good in TV, churches, televangelism, if you will. There are some pastors who do it right, and there's some that don't do it so well, and then there's some that are just downright ugly, and these are the ones we're talking about that cheat little old widow women out of their retirement income and their money, and we would probably more than likely not classify those as part of the good. Now, we talked about the first couple of ingredients to that megachurch early on, and how the baby boomers were influential in making the change toward these mega churches and mega church wannabes, because hey, we were educated, we were rebellious, we were ambitious, we were driven, and we thought it was important to change things just for the sake of change. And we often, as boomers, take things to the extreme. And we talked about a couple of those early mega churches there in the Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, the First Baptist Church, Hammond, Indiana, and there were many more. along that line, but that's some of the early mega churches. Now, we talked about the first two ingredients to the formula for success of these mega churches. And again, remember, we didn't say that these churches were ill-intentioned when they set out to create these mega churches, or the mega church wannabes, if you will. And those first two ingredients was a big fleet of buses, bring kids in on the buses. And the other was for the church to have some sort of Christian school and or college. I think I told you last week in the 70s there were nine Christian schools within 10 miles of each other in my community. Today there are two. So let's get into ingredient number three, if you will. And we're going to call that promotions and advertising. The church, as they started these mega churches, began advertising aggressively. Everything from billboards to big signs outside the church. All of these promotions that were done. Now, prior to the 1970s, if you go back in the 1950s, you would never hear of a church advertising anywhere. You invited people by word of mouth. You invited your neighbors to come to church in this community church. But in the 1970s, and when the electronic media was in full bloom, and you had a lot of opportunities to advertise or promote, the baby boomers, who were, I guess, the first really TV generation, just like we look at these kids today, they're native cell phone users. Their native computer users. Well, we baby boomers, we weren't quite that advanced, but we were native radio and TV users. All of us had our transistor radios that we listened to growing up, and there were all kinds of contests and promotions, be the fifth caller and you'd win something. So we saw this promotion early on, and we grew up watching Howdy Doody and Leave It to Beaver and all of those shows, and there were commercials on those shows. So we baby boomers got the idea, hey, you know, if post-toasties can advertise, certainly we as a church can advertise. So we took advantage of that electronic media. And during that time, there was a movement among the mega churches or the mega church wannabes. We had big signs. Big buildings. Everybody wanted to build a big new building, kind of like Field of Dreams, you know, if you build it, they will come. And so we built big buildings. We put big signs out in front of those buildings with changeable letters on them so that we could announce things or put some catchy slogan up there that people would see as they went by. And you, for the first time in a long time, you saw, maybe the first time ever, you very seldom saw it before the 70s, churches were locating, and many of them relocating, to places that could be seen from major highways. They were right along a major thoroughfare. They were sitting right beside the road. You remember the old song, A Little White Church in the Dale in the Wildwood? And used to, churches were in a lot of rural areas. They weren't right along the main highway for the most part. Now, some of them were, but some of them built beside that main highway before it became a main highway. But these churches thought it was important to be able to promote their brand, if you will, by being close to a major thoroughfare or even close to an interstate so that you could see them from the interstate. So they built big new buildings. They had big signs. They were close to major highways. And there were a lot of giveaways and competitions. So as a part of that promotion, there were giveaways and competitions. You had giveaways. Whoever brings the most visitors, we're going to give you a Scofield Bible. Whoever brings the most people to Sunday school, we're going to give you a coupon for dinner for you and your wife. Whoever brings the most visitors, we're going to recognize you and tell people, you know, how many visitors you got, and you got to stand up with your visitors, and you know, there was all this promotion and giveaways and competitions. Remember, we talked about the buses. These churches had fleets of buses, and you had competitions among the bus workers. They had competitions for who could bring the most kids in on their bus. So we were all about that. See, we grew up with it. be the fifth caller. Remember, be the fifth caller and win free record at, Davidson's Record Shop or something. And so we grew up with those kinds of promotions. Cracker Jack generation, where you always had a treat, had a special prize in the box. And believe it or not, back in the old days, those Cracker Jack prizes were pretty good. Now it's usually some kind of little piece of paper or something that, I'm not quite figured out how that's a treat. But anyway, we grew up in the atmosphere of promotions and giveaways, so we thought, man, if it worked for us, if we got our secret decoder ring with Ovaltine, then surely we could have some promotions to get people into church. And by and large, some of those efforts were successful. We also brought in big-name speakers. Which church could get the most famous speaker to come and speak at their church? Who can get Lester Roloff? Who could get Jerry Falwell? Who could get Jack Van Impe? Who could get the most popular and the most famous speaker in his church? And usually what that meant is if you had this speaker in, then they drew a pretty big crowd. They had people that followed them around, and you were going to get people following them around, and you were going to increase your numbers at church. And because of their being at your church and endorsing your congregation, it was, what's the word I want to use? It was indicative that they supported your ministry. And because they supported your ministry, people thought, well, if Jerry Falwell supports it, if Lester Roloff supports it, if Jack Van Impe supports it, it must be a good thing. So who could get the biggest name speakers to come in? So that third ingredient was promotions and advertising. And remember, they did it on TV, on radio. They had big signs. Preachers back in that day, they all wanted to have a radio show. They had a radio show that they could, get on there and have a rebroadcast of their service or whatever. And they had radio shows, a lot of those going on. Now, when we, like I say, we're going to get into the electronic church and the TV church, the good, the bad, and the ugly of that. But even before that, we had radio programs. Ingredient number four. Wonder what that would be. How about massive door-to-door visitation? How long has it been since you've had somebody knock at your door to tell you about Jesus? It's been a while, hasn't it, probably? The folks from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a lot of times you see those kids out on mission projects and knocking on doors. The Jehovah's Witness, they're pretty good about getting out and knocking on doors. But the Baptists used to be very aggressive in having massive door-to-door visitation. And we would gather together on a Thursday evening or a Saturday or whatever it might be, and we would get groups together, and we would go out and we would just bombard a neighborhood with 30 or 40 or 50 people knocking on doors, inviting them to your church. Today, kind of got to be careful about that, because you never know what kind of door you're knocking on. You don't know whether you're going into a meth lab. You don't know whether you're going into a drug den or whatever. So door-to-door visitation, because of some of that, has subsided to some degree. And to be quite honest with you, in this day and time, people are really cautious about opening their doors to anyone as well. So that has changed, and we'll talk about those changes as we go along. Accompanying that door-to-door visitation, which I guess we'll call this ingredient number five, but it goes hand in hand with massive door-to-door visitation, and that's something I would call power evangelism. Back in the 70s, there were soul-winning classes to teach people how to get in the house and how to get somebody to make a profession of faith in Jesus Christ. And a lot of those tactics that were used back then is what I would call sweeper salesman tactics, in that if you can get your foot in the door, I've got a pretty good chance of selling you a $1,000 sweeper. I know you don't want it. I know you don't want to have anything to do with it. But if I can get in the door and show you how good this thing works, there's a chance that we could do business. And so the power evangelism that went on in the 70s is a product of those baby boomers having a better idea. We'll just have massive door-to-door visitation, and then while we're there, we'll do this power evangelism. Not really winning people by befriending them and getting to know them, but it was an urgent 1-2-3 punch, and you go in and you win them and get them to make a quote-unquote profession of faith. And everybody used a pretty much similar, the same thing, the Romans Road. And the Romans Road works today. The Romans Road is still a good plan of salvation. Where you go in, you got to recognize you're a sinner. You've got to realize there's a penalty for sin. You've got to recognize that Jesus Christ is the payment for that sin. And you have to receive him, confess your sin, and receive him as your personal Savior to be saved. And there's nothing wrong with that plan. But the way we went about it back in the 70s really left a sour taste in some people's mouths. We were taught in soul winning classes, if somebody lets you in the door, and you get as far as the living room and they've got the TV set on, we were taught to go over and switch that thing off or ask them, could you turn your TV down so we could talk? Now, I don't know about you, but that's just a little bit brazen. It's a little bit bold. But I was right in the thick of that type of power evangelism back during the 1970s. But it's possible that some people, because of your aggressiveness, made a quote-unquote profession of faith in Jesus Christ, primarily to get you out of the living room so they can continue watching Dallas or something. You know, this guy's come in, he's turned my, you know, TV down. I don't really want to be rude and chase him off, but I want to get him out of here. So, yeah, I'll make this profession of faith. I'm not saying that's what happened every time, but I'm saying it could be possible. So power evangelism was one of those ingredients of that mega church movement in the 70s. And it was, a canned presentation, just like an Electrolux sweeper salesman or a Kirby sweeper salesman. They've got good products, but understand, they had a canned presentation that they went through, and that's basically how it was with power evangelism. You had one cookie cutter presentation that you would present to everyone. The problem with that is not everyone is at the same level in their spirituality or along the spiritual path, and some of them don't get that. And some of them, you know, you got to use a different approach. But power evangelism, that was one of the ingredients that early megachurch used as their formula for success. Now, we're actually going to the final ingredient that we've got here, and we've got a few minutes left, and I think we can cover this in the time we have left. And that's something called proselyting. Proselyting. And proselyting is taking someone from a church of like faith, someone who is preaching the same gospel that you're preaching, and entice them to come to your church. Now, proselyting, or, you know, that's mentioned in the Bible, but proselyting, the correct use of that would be getting someone out of a cult, getting someone out of a false doctrine, and getting them to see the light. But we Baptists, a lot of us, we were content with getting other Baptists out of other churches. And how did we do that? You know, how do you do that? How do you go in somebody's home and snatch them away to another church, even though the pastor in the church that they attended preached the very same doctrine that the pastor in your church preached? Well, how do you do that? There's got to be some incentive. And there was a list of them. We have a better youth program. Oh yeah, we've got a better youth program. We've got a youth pastor. We've got all these programs for the teenagers. We've got summer camp. We've got, you know, all these wonderful things. We take them on activities all the time, and we have a gym there. Oh my goodness, yes, we have a gym, and that was another one of those. That was another one of those ingredients, the gym. And we have that, and my goodness, they can come and they can play basketball, and we can do all kinds of things. So we've got a better youth program. Oh, we have a better music program. Yes, 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 we have a better music program. Our choir is just phenomenal. We have such a wonderful music program, and the director is just a wonderful person, and you just will be, but well, we have an orchestra. We have an orchestra, so if you've got kids that play in the school band, you know, they could get involved in the orchestra, and our music program is so much better than that church down the road. Oh, here's another. We have lots of activities for our senior citizens. You know, seniors are important, and we have the activities for these senior citizens. We've got a special bus for the seniors, and we take them places and on field trips, and we just have a great time with our senior citizens. Hey, we have a golf league. You know, come to our church. We have a golf league. Can you believe that? And, you know, you get discounted rates over at the country club, and we have such a wonderful time of fellowship. Hey, ladies, we have Zumba classes. Do you know we have Zumba classes? You know, come on over and take Zumba at the church. Well, the list is endless. The list is endless of the things that we can say. Now, some people have their own reasons. Some people have their own reasons. Some people will say, well, I'm just not getting fed. I'm just not getting fed at that church. You know, you're in church maybe 2 hours a week. If you come Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, maybe 3 hours a week you're there, okay? If all the time you spent feeding your body was three times a week, you'd be pretty anemic. Well, if the only feeding you get is what the pastor gives you, I'm sorry, you're a pretty anemic Christian. As a Christian, we have to take care of our own spiritual food. Now, I believe the pastor should be preaching the gospel. Now, if you've got a pastor that's no longer preaching the gospel, he's preaching things contrary to God's word, then that's a good reason to live. But just, I'm not being fed. He's preaching the right doctrine, but I'm just not being fed. Give me a break. Oh, well, we think we'll go to that church because they have two services. They have two services, yes. They have two services. They have a contemporary service, and they have a traditional service, and we can go to the early service, and we can be home in time so that we don't have to wait in line at the restaurant for dinner, or, you know, we can still have our golf foursome, or we can still go to the lake and do some water skiing if we go to the early service. You know, that's people's excuses for going to another church. I like their praise and worship team. Oh, yes, I like the praise and worship team. They make me feel so good. They make me feel so good. Is there anything wrong with a praise and worship team? No, not a thing. But you don't pick a church based on the music, the number of services they have, the youth program, the activities for senior citizens or golf league. You pick a church based on who's preaching the gospel. And, there are legitimate reasons for leaving a church. One of those reasons would be that the pastor is no longer preaching the gospel. He has gone down some primrose path that does not line up with your beliefs. So, if you can't get rid of the pastor, you find yourself another church where they're preaching the gospel. That's a reason to leave. What's another reason to leave? Well, you move. Your job takes you out of town, and you move. That's a good reason to leave the church. I mean, if your church is in Huntington, West Virginia, and your job takes you to Cincinnati, Ohio, you're probably not going to be very faithful to commute back and forth from Cincinnati to Huntington, West Virginia. And so that would be a good reason to move. Probably the only other reason I can think of is if God really calls you, you're not mad at anybody, you're not angry, you know, you're not in disagreement with the church, but God really moves upon your heart to go someplace else either a ministry or you're going because God is just leading you to go to this little church that needs some help. I think it's probably a valid reason too. But other than that, you know, if your church is preaching the gospel, you need to stay and you need to support that church. And you need not to fall into all of these offers you have from those churches who proselyte. And we're going to talk more about that as we get on. Hey, well, we have finished our discussion of the intro of the mega church of the 70s. So next week, and probably for just a few episodes, we'll be talking about the TV church and what it has done to the local church. And we're going to talk, like I said, about the good, the bad, and the ugly of that TV church, because there's a little bit of all of it, and some are good, some are bad, and some are just downright ugly. But we're going to talk about the televised church for a couple of episodes. Well, hey, if you liked our broadcast, if you liked our podcast, please share it with your friends. Tell them to tune in. Say that guy's, he's a little bit of a country hick, but he has some good things to say. And share us on Facebook, share us with your friends. If you don't like us, if you didn't like us, if you're saying, man, this is terrible, please don't tell people how terrible we are, okay? Just keep that to yourself. So we appreciate you tuning in. We hope that you'll come back next week and for every episode of Be Boomer Unleashed. So until we meet again, have a great week, and may God bless each and every one of you. Goodbye.